Brown Brown. Love you more. Can you hear me in the back? First thing I want to do is thank Dwayne and the committee and the whole convention committee. It's an honor and a privilege to be here. I'm overwhelmed by this. Yeah, like you said, he called me up and he says, you know, we heard your tape, and I went, wow. Turned to Lisa and I asked, did you send the tape in from him? I like this actually. I don't know why I'm nervous, because I like this. I like having captive audiences. I wanted to be a rabbi once. That's how captive I wanted my audience. One of the last things I do before I get up to speak, but I haven't spoken in a while, is get on my knees and ask the God of my understanding to speak through me so you could get a good message. I got butterflies in my stomach, so hopefully sometime soon he'll kick in and you'll hear what you're supposed to hear tonight. I don't sing any fancy songs or read any beautiful poetry. I don't have this wonderful thing that I do while I'm up here. The only thing I do when I speak at a Narcotics Anonymous meeting is to share my experience, my strength, and my hope. The experience that I have through this program, the strength that I got, and a hope for myself as well as, you know, everybody. The hope that you hear a message and the hope that I can stay clean by listening, you know, remembering my story. I also don't talk a lot about drugs. I don't think there's a person in here who needs to hear about drugs, you know. So. I'm going to look for the steps real quick, and that's just because I feel most comfortable when I'm speaking in the steps from in front of me there. Okay. The one thing I will do is I will tell you that a week before I got clean, I was at a point in my life where I didn't think there was anywhere else to go. I was feeling helpless and hopeless, penniless, jobless, unemployable, unemployed. No friends, no family that wanted to talk to me. I ate where I could, slept where I could. I found myself back in New York, where I'm from. Not that you could tell by my accent. Back in New York, trying to work something out. And the thing that I was trying to work out didn't work out. And I'm not really sure. I gotta be honest with you. I'm the only person who has on a grand jury transcript that my brain cells are fried from drugs. You know, because after about a year and a half of being clean, they finally caught up with me for shit that I... Can I say that? For stuff that I had done in the past. And I had to go... In fact, I had to go to Maryland, where Randy's from. Where's Randy? There. I don't see him. Okay. I had to go to Maryland to face a grand jury, and when I had a year and a half clean for stuff that I had done like 3 years earlier, and when the Attorney General of the United States was asking me how come I didn't remember all of these things, I told him, I guess my brain cells are fried from the drugs, and it's actually in grand jury transcripts. So I really, you know, it's like, I really don't remember a lot of things that happened the last couple of days. But I do remember that the last day I was out there, I was all of those things and more that I just told you about. And somehow or other, I ran out of drugs too. But somehow or other, my sister came along in my old neighborhood, and she took me out to my mom's house. And she was living on Long Island, and my brother got me enough money to go back to Miami, where I was living at the time, and I had gone to Miami originally because I wanted to get away from the drugs in New York. And I went back to Miami, and my brother sent me back on gave me plane ticket, plane money, and got back to Miami, and I said, what do? And he had told me about this fellowship that he had been going to for about 3 months called Narcotics Anonymous. I was so afraid that when when I heard the name Narcotics Anonymous, because of all the stuff that I was into, that if I picked up the phone and called information, that like, and I said the word narcotics on the phone, they'd be like, you know, the tree police would come and get me, you know. The LA cops would be knocking at my door, and you know, I'd be carted away, you know, because they knew. They knew. Everyone knew. But so what I do is I looked in the phone book, and I gotta say, you guys are part of committees, part of the service structure, part of service in Narcotics Anonymous. I'm so glad that public information does its job, because the number is in the phone book. I'm so glad that, well, I'm an H&I guy myself, but I'm so glad that, you know, like the 12-step people were doing their job before I even know what any of this stuff was, because a guy called me back. And he said to me, well, you're in luck. There's a meeting right down the block from your house in an hour, and I could be there if you want to meet me. And I guess if I knew then what I know now about how many meetings there really are where I was from and how often they hold these meetings, I might not have felt the way that I did. But when he told me that I was in luck, I really felt that for the first time in a whole lot of years, I was in luck. And that this guy could meet me too. Wow. And I went to this meeting, and I don't remember a whole lot about this meeting, except that people told me to keep coming back. I rode up to my first meeting on a motorcycle. My hair was down to my ass. Wearing leathers and boots and a ripped t-shirt and ripped jeans. And it's funny, only about 6 months ago or so I cut my hair. It used to be part of my story. Dwayne was talking to me about this earlier, that when he heard the tape, part of my story used to be, it's been this long since I got in trouble. Because every time I had to go to court, I had to cut my hair. And every time I cut it, like really short, and then I have to wait till it grows back again. And it was like 12 years into recovery, and I was going, it's been this long since I cut, you know, since I got in trouble last. And about 6 months ago, it was like so hot. I was working, and I was sweating, and my hair was bothering me. I'd like fold it up over my head, and then back again, and then back again. My neck was all sweaty and irritated, and I just wanted my old lady's, my young lady? He's a hairdresser. So I walked into a shop one day and I said, look, you gotta do something to this. And she said, well, I can snip it for you. I said, okay, do it, you know. And she got sicker than I did. She cut it off and went, oh my. She was used to seeing me with long hair for all this time. And it's not that, like, it's funny too, because I still own a Harley. And I'm that's where I got my Serenity from too. And I sold one of them about, probably about 2 weeks ago. I had a 78, well, it doesn't matter. But I sold one of them about 2 weeks ago, and I still have one more. But I don't dress in, like, the boots and the leathers, and I don't wear colors anymore. And somebody came over to me the other day at a convention, last month, 2 months ago, at a convention, said, didn't you used to be a biker? I thought, yeah, I still am, but I just dress better these days. It's amazing what recovery can do for you. Amazing what Lisa can do for me. They told me that, my sponsor told me that you're always your best when you're raw at meetings. And next week, Lisa and I are getting married. Done it before. But I guess I'm pretty raw because I'm pretty nervous, you know. It's like, this time I think I'm doing it for the right reasons. I actually like and love the girl that I'm with, you know. And there are no drugs there. So it's pretty cool too. But this is like, these are all just like, you know, things that have been going on with me. And you know, I'm going to go back to like, I guess it's a good thing I don't know the song because I'd probably sing along. Let me get back to my first meeting. I got to my first meeting, I pulled up on my motorcycle, I got off, and I pulled off my leather jacket, and I walked into the room, and I don't remember a whole lot. I do remember that when I walked into the room, there was a bunch of people sitting down, and they were like smiling, pretty much like what everyone's doing here tonight. It was like, you know, their eyes weren't glassed over. They weren't sunken back in their heads. They had, you know, like some life behind their eyes. And there was a bunch of people sitting in this room. And I walked in and I was 170 pounds back then. Okay, and all of those things, you know, my eyes were sunk back in my head. I had big black circles underneath my eyes. I was like torn and tattered, you know. And I walked in and I pulled off my leather jacket and I saw this girl sitting in the back. And I walked over to her and I put my jacket down and I said, "Can I leave this here for a minute?" And she said, "Yeah, sure." And I don't know what I did, went to the bathroom and got some coffee or whatever, and I came back and I sat down next to her. And I asked her about, you know, what was going on, and she said, "It's a speaker meeting, you know, listen." I don't remember. I was looking at her, or maybe concentrating on the motorcycle being out front or something, who knows. But I was sitting down listening, and I heard "Keep Coming Back." I heard "Work the Steps or Die." And I heard "Get a Sponsor." I think that the girl also told me those same things. And this guy Cliff that called me back from the helpline, he walked in and he came over to me and said, "You must be." Gee, how did you know? So we talked for a little while, and afterwards they took me to coffee, and we hung out for a while, and this girl that I had been sitting with, she pulled out a meeting list, and she said, "Well, this is the meetings that I'm going to be going to tomorrow night, you know," and I went there, "Keep Coming Back." And when I went to that meeting that night, I heard "Keep Coming Back," "Work the Steps or Die," and "Get a Sponsor," and I asked the girl, I said, "What meeting are you going tomorrow night?" She pulled out a meeting list, and she said, "This one," and, you know, they say, "Bring the body and the mind will follow." I follow parts of my anatomy. I don't know about my whole body. And I just kept coming back. And finally, I met this other guy, and he pulled up to a couple of meetings on a motorcycle. And, you know, it was something about, like, being new in recovery. One of the things I always looked at was whether a guy was packing or not. I've lost that edge, not that I really care to have it anymore, and I don't really know when it happened that I lost that edge, but I do remember one time I was working out, I was sitting in my living room. In our house, I have a weight bench right in the middle of my living room, and I haven't worked out in about 6 months, but this is probably about 6 months ago. I was working out in the living room, I was laying down on the bench, and we have an upstairs, the staircase is right in front of the bench, and I was working out, I was just laying down on the bench working out. And all of a sudden, I heard Lisa say, "Bam," and I'm looking around, like, "Where the hell are you, you know?" And she said, "I'm up here." I said, "When did you get here?" She said, "I just walked in a few minutes ago and walked right past you." I said, "Wow, I lost the edge." You know, that edge about knowing exactly what was going on everywhere around me, who's packing, who's got it, who doesn't have it, who's with somebody, who's single. I knew all of those things when I walked into a room. I could, like, you know, scan it out and know everything. But I lost it. And I don't care that I have it anymore, you know, because I don't plan on needing it anymore. But when I first got clean, that was just like inbred in me already, you know, like I knew it. And there was a guy that used to come to meetings on a motorcycle also, and he packed. There was no doubt in my mind that he had a piece in his back. And I was okay because I had one under my shoulder for the first couple of weeks. But they told me to find somebody who had what you wanted and ask him to sponsor you. I think I was driving a 1,000cc engine and he had a 1,200 at the time, you know. So I asked him to sponsor me. Now, after I asked him to sponsor me, things changed a little bit because now I've been going to meetings for a couple of weeks and I started hearing people say, "Work the steps." And I heard my sponsor tell me, "You got to work the steps." And I remember going to meetings, and used to see two posters up on the wall at meetings that I used to go to. One of them had the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. One had the 12 traditions of Narcotics Anonymous. Nobody ever told me to work the traditions, so I figured I was halfway home. And then I looked down the steps, and, you know, I thought it said, "Don't do drugs, things will get better." I said, "I'm done with that one, I'm here." Second one said something about God. I could skip that one. I wasn't much into God back then. Third one definitely said God, so I could skip that one. Fourth one was talking about some kind of an inventory, and you could forget about that. And fifth one was sharing it with somebody. No way. Six and seven talked about shortcomings and character defects, and poof, I'm perfect, so don't do that. The 8th step said something about making amends, and the 9th step said doing amends. And I figured, well, yeah, let me try these two. And I called up one of my ex's moms, and I said, Rosemary, it's me. I'm clean like a hot 3 weeks now. Things are better. I'm okay. I just want to apologize for ever hurting you. And she said, you know you're an asshole. You always were an asshole. You always were an asshole. Wasn't exactly the response I was looking for. So the next time I went to a meeting, I was reading those steps things again, and I passed 8 and 9 this time, 10, more inventory stuff, 11, meditation, you could turn me into a guru or something here, 12, hey, help another addict. I'll try this one. I was walking down the street in Miami, and I was in front of a convenience store, and there was a guy walking the other way smoking this drug. And I walked up to him and I grabbed this thing out of his mouth and I told him all about this great program that could help him just the way it was helping me. I didn't exactly get the response I was looking for from him. So I'm back to this guy who's carrying a gun and wearing the colors and riding a motorcycle, and I said, look, the steps don't work. He said, what do you mean the steps don't work? I said, look, this is my experience with the steps, and they don't work. He said, the steps are in order for a reason. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, the steps are in order for a reason. I said, what's the reason? He said, because when they work them the way you try to, they won't work. So I fired him. So I found this other guy who was a lot bigger than me, and I asked him to sponsor me. I figured maybe, you know, this guy would know what he's talking about. So I told him about my experience with the steps also. And he told me the same thing. This guy was a little bit afraid to fire because he was so much bigger than me. I don't know why I wasn't afraid of a guy with a gun. I was afraid of a guy who was bigger than me. I'm still friends with the first guy. In fact, he called me up like a couple weeks ago. He was coming through North Carolina, where I'm living now, and he wanted to know if he could stop by, but we weren't going to be there or something. So it's like, the program really does, like, the program really does make some strange friendships. Strange friendships. I introduced my fiancé's ex-husband at a convention last month. He was a speaker, and he asked me to introduce him. And like, we're friends, too, you know. And I was friends with him before I was friends with her. And in fact, he's dating a girl who was very instrumental in me staying clean early in the beginning of my recovery, too, which is really strange, you know. So, like, the four of us were together, and people were going, wait a second. What kind of weird shit's going on here? My sponsor told me that the steps are in order and you're supposed to work them in the way that they're written and you're supposed to work them in order. And he said, the first one doesn't say anything about drugs. First one says that we admitted that we were powerless over our addiction and that the first step is broken up into two parts. So the first part talks about our addiction, and that's the only thing that I have to make sure that I do every single day, the only step that I have to work on every single day in order to stay clean. The second half and the rest of the 11 is how I recover. Anybody can stay clean and work in the first half of the first step. It takes working the steps, working with a sponsor. In my opinion, working with an NA sponsor who's got an NA sponsor who's got an NA sponsor. That's just my opinion, and the views reflected here are not necessarily those of the management of the station or of our sponsors. told me that I was an NA Nazi. I'm Jewish. I can't be a Nazi. So I told him I was a vigilante. It says in our traditions we must be vigilant. I got a computer. For the first time, I got this thing. It's got like, I don't know, 9 billion megahertz, 400 gigahertz. But I could get onto this internet thing. And I got conferences there, recovery, well, you know, they say it's recovery conferences, but I haven't seen any NA conferences, so I haven't been on any yet. I'm going to throw that in. When I have an NA conference, then I'll go. Then I'll say that I have recovery. No, I shouldn't say that. You know, it's funny, too, because our steps tell us, well, at the beginning of one of our books, it says that, maybe this is a bad time to talk about it, but, hell, I'm on a roll. It says in the beginning that we're really grateful to some other fellowship for having showed us the way. And I think that's really great that we, you know, like, long ago we were. But, you know, as addicts, I don't think we ever borrowed anything. You know, I remember stealing a bicycle, painting it red, changing the serial number, and calling it mine. As far as I'm concerned, we own these steps, you know. When my sponsor and I were working on the first half of the first step, we were talking about addiction, and addiction wasn't necessarily drugs. Addiction could be any of those many things that got me into whatever it was that made my life unmanageable. It was gambling, it was sex, it was cars, it was motorcycles, it was the drugs for sure, but there were so many other things also. And it wasn't until I put down the drugs that I could start working the first half of the first step. And then I could start working on the addiction part of my recovery. When we got through with the first half of the first step, and he said it was time to work the second half of the first step, and again, this is the way my sponsor worked the steps with me, and the way that the guys that I sponsor, I work the steps with. But there are so many different ways to work the steps, and as long as you have a good sponsor, and if you don't, then get a new one. But as long as you have a good sponsor, and he works the steps of Narcotics Anonymous, and you know, and you're working them with them, then whatever way he says to do them, then that's the right way. But this is just what worked for me. And when we got to the second half of the first step, I thought that it said, life is going to get better now. And my sponsor told me that it says, life became unmanageable. You're still going to get flat tires. You're still going to be late for work. You're still going to run into assholes on the road. As a matter of fact, I was working the second half of the first step, and my alarm clock didn't ring one morning. I was late for work. And of course, the guy who manufactured the alarm clock was an asshole. When I got outside, my Milwaukee iron wouldn't crank. And of course, everybody in Milwaukee was an asshole. And then when I finally did get to work, like on the way, people were cutting me off on the road. They didn't see, you don't see something that makes that much racket and has its headlight on. But they don't see motorcycles for some reason. But everyone who cut me off, of course, they were an asshole. And when I got to work, of course, my boss was an asshole for yelling at me for being late to work. And you know, finally, I just left there, went home, called my sponsor, and I said, look, everybody's being an asshole today. And he said, if you change your attitude, there'll be one less asshole. It was funny the way that everything that happened in my life happened during the steps that I was working. It's amazing the way God puts things into my life. We got to the second step after that, and it says that we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. Now, my sponsor always told me that the first three words were some of the most important words in that step. And you got to take each one of them individually. We, then we came, then we came to. I can't do it alone. I have to show up, and I have to wake up. None of those things apply to my using. I did it alone. I never showed up. And most of the time, I passed out and came to. The rest of the stuff is a lot easier to work on than that. I'm My sponsor always gave me assignments. He always gave me assignments to write. He always gave me assignments to read. He always gave me things to do. And it always matters that things that were going on in my life always seemed to correspond with the things that were going on in my steps. When I finished the 12th step, it was funny too, because when I got through all the steps, I didn't graduate. I didn't get a badge that said I'm recovered. I can't put a plaque on my wall that says, good job, you've made it. My sponsor sends me back to the first step when we start all over again. And each time I go through the steps, I learn more about this addict. And hopefully, you know, through that, I can learn more about all of yous. And hopefully, you know, you can keep me clean one more day. When I got to the third step, that girl that was sitting in the back of the room and I were living together. I don't know, my sponsor telling me I should learn the difference between my will and God's will. And I went over to this girl one day and I said, you know, like, I'm having a little problem with this. Can you help me out? What's the difference between God's will and my will? And she said, well, your will is anything that you want to do without asking anybody for help first. God's will is anything I want you to do. Needless to say, we're not together. But there are four words in the third step that I think are more important than any other words in any of the other steps. And I say this because the way I read it, everywhere I've ever seen it written, whether the steps are written in bold print in our text or on italics on our cards, those four words, which are repeated twice in the steps, are written differently. In our book, when they're written in bold print, those four words are written in italics. When on our sheets and our cards, when all the words are written in italics, those four words, repeated twice, are written in bold print. As we understood him. There's a lot to be said about those four words. Now, I don't know if you're into this gender correct bullshit of politically correctness, and, you know, I don't know if you want to say, you know, as we understood God. Okay, that's fine. But I think if you just take it at face value, that him is a term that people use unilaterally, is that the word I'm looking for things that involve man or humankind. As we understood him. It's not the God of my misunderstanding from my childhood, you know, that gotcha God, you know, like, you do something and your mother tells you, do that again and God's going to get you. You do it again, you fall down a flight of stairs and she says, see, God got you. Much like the God I grew up with, that got you, God. It's not the understand, it's not, you know, like, thank God I can come to a meeting in Virginia at the Pat Robertson Hotel. And not have to worry about being a good Christian. You know, nobody ever told me because I'm Jewish I can't recover. Nobody ever told me that, hell, if I was an atheist I couldn't recover. Nobody ever told me that when I first got clean I didn't even believe, I shouldn't say that I didn't believe that there was a God, I just didn't believe that he'd give a fuck about me. I said that word again, didn't I? That he cared about me. Because if he cared about me, why did he put me through all that stuff that I was going through? So it's only been probably the last 2 years that I even say the word God when we do the Serenity Prayer. For all of those years that I was clean, I had this understanding of a we understood God. The basic text tells us that he has to be loving, caring, and greater than ourselves. And that's all I used for 10 years. That he's loving, caring, and greater than ourselves. So that's the God that we understood in this room. And that was so much easier, because when I first got to the first step and I thought that I could work the third step and sit somewhere about God and I know I couldn't do it, I would never have gotten it. But when I got to the third step, and when I got to the second step, it was funny because I told my sponsor, I can't do this step. He said, why? I said, because it talks about God. He said, where does it talk about God? I said, right there, the power greater than ourselves. Everybody says, the power greater than myself that I call God. He said, nowhere in the step does it say God. I said, well, myself then. He said, you believe in science? I said, yeah. Show me. He said, something knocked you off your feet, put you on your knees. That was the drugs. Something brought you off of your knees and you're walking tall again. What was that? Narcotics Anonymous? He said, okay. It's about greater than ourselves. And that's what I used for 10 years. As the power greater than myself. That feeling that I get when I walk into a room anywhere. And I get hugs and smiles. And a front row filled with black girls going, oh boy. Some feeling, you know, have a bunch of black girls sitting in front of the room going, telling me, go boy, you know, go white boy, yeah. Well, that's a feeling. You can't get that anywhere else but in Narcotics Anonymous. So for 10 years, the power greater than ourselves that I used was this fellowship feeling, that feeling that I get from this fellowship. And that's what I used for like a lot of years, until like about 2 years ago, I guess. When I moved on to my fourth step with my sponsor, again, you know, we worked on it, and I said, I don't know nothing about this thing. You know, if we're writing the searching and feeling, let me tell you, the first, he told me what to write. I mean, this guy told me what I should do. You know, he told me that I should skip the line between each thing. I should write only the people that were there and the thing that happened. I didn't have to write all the details. I just have to, you know, like, and he told me, but it wasn't. And no matter what I read and no matter what I saw, it wasn't searching and it wasn't fearless. And it surely wasn't a moral inventory. And a lot of the time that I was doing this fourth step, I didn't even bother to write. I would think of something and I'd be afraid to put it on paper. And I'd walk around with that anger all day long. And I'd yell at people and I'd scream and I'd be loud and obnoxious. Well, some things don't change. But that's the way I was doing this fourth step for a long time. Finally, my sponsor said, why don't you just pray that it'll come out of your head, into your arm, out, onto the pen, and then onto the paper. And I said, yeah, but then I got to do a fifth step afterwards, and I got to share that with somebody. And he told me if I've learned anything, that you got to do the steps in order, and that they're each separate from the next. I don't know, help me out here. Can anyone do a fourth step and not know that they're going to do a fifth step later? I don't know. But that's what he told me I needed to do. I gave it a shot. But I can't tell you that when I prayed that it would come out of me and onto the paper and I'd be able to leave the anger and the guilt on the paper, it was a whole lot easier to do it. And I prayed, and every day I prayed, and when I prayed, I wrote for like 3 hours straight. And then I'd put it down and go to sleep. And when I woke up the next morning, if I had nothing to do, which early in my recovery, I really didn't have much to do. Early in my recovery, I was like so unemployable that my sponsor had a friend who owned an Italian restaurant. And he says, well, if you would just come in and stir this big vat of sauce that we have with this giant wooden spoon that we have, we'd be able to free up a couple of the people to do the real work. Okay. So I showed up at this Italian restaurant, and the guy hands me the spoon and says, there's the vat. All you gotta do is stir it, I'll be back in an hour. And he left. And I looked at the vat, and I looked at this big wooden spoon, and I called up my sponsor, and I said, which way do I stir? That was a wreck. That was a wreck. So that's how bad things had been. So when I was doing this fourth step, it was like the same thing. I just like, you know, things were like bad, and I was carrying around, and I didn't know what to do, and I didn't know where to go, and I didn't, you know, and then I started writing. So I didn't have much work to do in the mornings. You know, I woke up, yeah, I'll go down there and stir the sauce in a little while, you know. So I would pray, and I would write. Then I'd go stir some sauce, come home, go to a meeting, pray and write. I can make a killer sauce these days, though. Right? I finished my fourth step.
Now, I got clean about 2 weeks after this guy, Jeff.
Jeff and I had been friends. In recovery, we stayed friends.
But he got clean like 2 weeks before me. And he got the same sponsor, too, and I hated that. And I was always like, you know, I thought it was like some sort of a race. And I called him my sponsor, and I said, did you finish your fourth step already? He said, yeah. I said, damn. I said, all right, let me make an appointment to do my fifth with you. And he said, oh, okay, when do you want? I said, I'll be there Saturday. He said, well, Jeff is coming Friday. I said, okay, I'll be there Thursday.
He said, sorry, I can't do it Thursday. You have to come from Saturday. Well, I got on my sponsor's house the Saturday morning and we started doing the fifth step. Funny thing about this fifth step was that I had no plans on telling him everything that was in this book. So what I do is I copied some of the better stuff into another book. And I knew that I was going to bring only the better book with me. And I got to my sponsor's house and I opened it up and started reading and oh shit, brought the wrong book. Don't try this because you'll get jammed. God works in mysterious ways. See, one of the things I've added to my God since the days of being just, loving, caring, and greater than myself, is that he's got a sense of humor. And it never fails that he uses his sense of humor in the most inopportune times for me. It must be great timing for him, but this isn't always good for me. But I went over to my sponsor's house and I started doing this fifth step. And finally when I finished, I said, look, I got to know something. I said, my sponsor was RT. I said, RT, in fact, he's still my sponsor. I said, RT, I got to know. I said, RT, is Jeff like better than me or worse than me? Or what kind of a guy is he, Well, my sponsor said, the only difference between you and Jeff is he did it with a goat and you did it with a sheep. Nah. Just kidding. I finished my fifth step. What my sponsor was trying to tell me was that we're all the same. It don't matter. It doesn't matter how much, how little. I think I read that somewhere too. It doesn't matter where we came from, matters where we're going. And we're all coming, we're all showing up, so I guess we're going in the same direction. It didn't matter what kind of drugs I did, what kind of drugs he did. It didn't matter how much pain we inflicted on ourselves or on other people. It didn't matter how badly we prostituted ourselves. Because we got to do what we got to do in order to get here. And once we get here, we can do the first half of the first step and stay clean, or we can do the other 11 and a half also and start to recover. I haven't liked recovery. I haven't liked it a whole lot. I don't reckon I got no reason to kill nobody. Finished my fifth step, and my sponsor had been writing while I was doing my fifth step. He had been writing all of these things down, things that I had to work on, shortcomings, character defects. Now, my sponsor did split up the 6 and 7 step, but I'm not going to because what he did was he gave me assignments. He gave me a bunch of assignments that he wanted me to start with the first one and do it for 6 weeks. But after 2 weeks, start on the second one and do that one for 6 weeks. But after 2 weeks, start on the third one. And he had all these assignments for me to do. I didn't understand a lot of these assignments. One of them was, do something nice for someone and don't tell them why you're doing it. I went into this meeting every day and he told me to, that was the first one, do something nice to someone and then not tell them why you're doing it. So what I used to do is I was riding my motorcycle and in Florida they have these toll booths. Did I get them in Virginia? No, they're on North Carolina. That's two boats here? Okay. Well, when you're on a motorcycle, as those of you who ride know, you can go to the far right or the far left, miss that little bar in the middle, and they never pick up on it, and you just go on by. Sometimes it's only a dime, and sometimes you can save yourself 50 cents or a dollar. Well, after I got clean, I figured what I would do is, like, I can't really go back and tell them, look, let me give you back all those 50-cent pieces that I stole from you, you know? But what I do is I went up to the booth and I would, like, hand the lady a quarter or whatever it was, and I'd say, and also, this is for the car behind me. And then I'd goose it and take off. Then I started having some fun with it. I started waiting to see if there was, like, some girl driving the car behind me, and, like, her boyfriend sitting next to her in the car with her. And here I was with head down to my ass, a leather jacket, and I was wearing colors, and I had my boots on, and I'm riding the motorcycle, and, you know, like, my hands up here, and I pull up, and I give the lady 50 cents, and here's another 50 cents for you. For the car behind me, and I'd take off, and I'd take off real slow, and I'd watch in my side view mirror, and you can almost hear the guy saying, and where the hell do you know him from? Let's start having a little fun with the assignments. So after like 2 or 3 weeks of figuring them out, that didn't seem so bad anymore. There was one that he told me to find somebody that I honestly disliked and say something honestly nice to them. That's ridiculous. If I don't like you, you're going to know I don't like you. But he said, this is what you got to do. So, and there's this one guy who used to come to meetings all the time. He was a whiny son of a bitch. Shared the same damn thing every time he shared. Weasel of a guy. Just made you sick to look at him, you know? But one day I walk into a meeting, this guy's got this really nice pair of sunglasses on. So I said, hey, David, you got a really nice pair of sunglasses. Thank you. And I walked away. The next day I went to a meeting and I saw this guy at the meeting, he was wearing sunglasses, and I went up to him and I said, David, you have a really nice pair of sunglasses. I'm thinking. And the third day and the fourth day, same thing. Every day I did the same thing. The whole time I was on this assignment, that's what I did. Every day at the meeting that he was wearing these sunglasses, he had a really, I honestly liked those pair of sunglasses that he had on. And I honestly disliked this guy. Well, after I got done with all of these different assignments that my sponsor had given me for the 6th and 7th step, I went back to my sponsor and said, okay, you know, what did you learn from that one? I said, that David's got a really nice pair of sunglasses. He said, no, really, what did you learn from that? I thought about it for a little while. I said, well, you know what? I guess I'm going to get philosophical on you here, RT, if I look deep enough. I could find something that I like about everybody, no matter how much I dislike them. Smack me in the head. He said, that's exactly the point. I don't have to like people in these rooms. There are some people that I still really don't like. But when it comes to recovery, I must love each and every one of you unconditionally. God forbid I'm ever in a place where the only phone number I have is David's. And he knew how I really felt about him. I changed his name to protect the innocent. There's been times in recovery that this has actually happened. I've been to a meeting and it'd be another guy like on the opposite end of the room, and like, you know, I'd be like the HNI chair for our region and he'd be like the HNI chair for the area, and I hated the way he was doing things, you know. And we'd be doing it all wrong, you know. And he'd be trying to do things in meetings that I didn't think you should be doing in, you know, HNI meetings. And we'd be sitting at opposite ends of the and some newcomer would walk in the door. And they'll be shaking and sweating and puking. And then we both get to the same meeting on a Saturday evening or a Sunday afternoon or something, and some newcomer will walk in the door. And they'll be shaking and sweating and puking. They'll be about 170 pounds with their eyes on the back of their head, wearing a leather jacket or something. And they'll come and sit down. And we'd get up and we'd flank them.
and we'd sit with him for the meeting, and after the meeting we'd invite him to coffee, and after that if he needed a place to crash, we'd find a place for him to crash, if not one of our houses. And no matter how much I hated this guy on the other end of the table during a service committee meeting, I loved him to death sitting right next to me in that meeting, unconditionally. And that's one of the things I learned through working the 6 and 7 step assignments that my sponsor had given me. And getting to the 8 step was a little bit different. My sponsor told me I needed to make 4 lists. People that I hurt financially, people that I hurt emotionally, people that I hurt physically, and people that I think owed me amends. I did that one first. That was easy. It was also fun. Acting a lot of people that owed me amends. Financially was also pretty easy. Hell, I got those notes in the mail every week. I know who I owe money to. Physically, well, I knew there was a couple of people out in Arizona whose kneecaps I broke with a baseball bat when they owed us money for drugs, but, you know, I didn't really expect to do amends to these people, but, you know, let them down. And emotionally, all my ex-wives and girlfriends were on our list. And my parents, I guess, also. Came time for me to do a 9-step. I went to my sponsor, and he said, okay. He said, let's take a look at, you know, the lists. And I showed him the one that I thought people who owed me an amends first. And he took that one, crumpled up into a ball, and threw it in the trash can. He said, what are you doing that for? He said, well, they're not working a program. You are. He wasn't bigger than me. For the emotional one, he told me to put my name on the top because I forgot that one. He said, I hurt me more than anybody else could have hurt me. And I hurt me more than I hurt most of the people around me. But he said that emotional amends, some of the best things that I could do for these people was just never talk to them again. The ex-wives and girlfriends, anyway. For the parents, he said the best thing I could do is just stay clean. Because they sure as hell didn't want to hear, I'm sorry, I'll never do it again, please let me borrow the car one more time. Or, this time I won't steal anything if you give me the keys. Or, loan me money, I promise you'll get it back. They don't want to hear that shit. So I said, the best thing I could do is just stay clean. Probably took about a year and a half before my family actually invited me back into their home. Which I guess, being that I hurt them for so long, that's pretty damn good. And now, like, you know, they barely remember it. You know, being that it was, you know, a little while ago. But it's nice to be able to see for the first time your mom smiling at you again, you know? And I couldn't do that step before I was ready to do that step. For the people that I hurt physically, boy, well, I was right about one thing. My sponsor told me there's no way I could call up this guy and go, yo, I'm sorry I broke your knees. What I had to do instead is go to hospitals and volunteer my time. It was a humbling experience. And I learned a lot from it. And hell, if you want to know what I learned from it, you can come and grab me after the meeting. I'd be happy to talk to you because I love talking about recovery. I got 2 people here tonight. Kathy's doing a taping and Lisa's over there. And both of them told me that they would let me know when I've talked too much. Kathy said she was going to let me know by putting her hands up because the paper's running out. But I love talking about recovery. So if you want to hear anything else I got to say, I'd be happy to talk to you afterwards. Hell, I stay up all night and talk recovery. I love recovery. Or Holly Davidson. I can talk about that too. The financial list was also pretty easy. Now, I didn't have the money to pay all these people back, and I definitely, and my sponsor told me I wasn't supposed to pay some of the drug debts back. He said, that's something that just, you know, you don't want to go back into those places again. There's no reason for me to go into a shooting gallery today. He said, you know, you don't go into a whorehouse to order a ham sandwich. There's only one purpose to go to the shooting gallery. So if I have a drug debt, I made out. It worked. My scam worked. We scored. I still do that today. When I go to the ATM machine and I put the card in and I punch in the numbers and they actually give me money, I turn and go, I scored. Oh, no. The money.
really nice was starting to pay people off. Now, there was a lady that I had met in recovery that I borrowed some money from early in recovery to help me get my electric turned back on again. It was funny. My first year of recovery, I always knew when it was time to pick up a chip because they turned my electric off. 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, 6 months, a year. Count on it. My electric was off. Oh, time to pick up a chip. So I had borrowed money from this lady. And about a year and a half after that, I got a note from her saying, thank you very much for paying me back. I think that's really... It's been a couple of years, but she actually called me something nice. And I don't think I've ever gotten a letter like that. And that was like some kind of feeling. But I moved on to the 10th step. See, the thing about the 10th step is, we're supposed to promptly admit when we're wrong. Now, if you're anything like me, which I assume you're a lot like me, because there's not a whole lot of difference in this room. If you're here in this room tonight, you went to some of the same places I did. That's very hard to say, I'm wrong. I'm sorry is getting a little bit easier, but I'm wrong just isn't. Sometimes I can actually say, well, maybe you're right. But it took a real long time, and I didn't get it the first time through the steps, and I didn't get it the second time through the steps, and I have no idea when, but I was finally able to say that, yes, I'm wrong, and we need to change that. But I'll tell you, one of the things that I've learned from that is that it makes things so much smoother, because you don't lose friendships, and you gain new ones. Now, when I first moved to Durham, which was about 2 or 3 years ago, I guess, I don't have a bongo for me to join in with them. Maybe a tambourine. I'm getting feeling. Moved to Durham about 3 years ago, I guess. I used to laugh that I ain't got no friends. I don't need no friends. You know, I'm doing this alone. I call my sponsor when I need to, and I usually have, like, you know, a lady on my arm or something, you know, but I don't need no friends. And it's only been probably like the last 3 years that I figured out why. There was a guy that I called one day, and I was like going through something. I called my sponsor and he wasn't around, and I called this other guy and he wasn't around, you know, like my two friends. So I like went down my list, you know, sure, I gotta call a third person, this has never happened to me before. And I called this guy up, and, you know, and I said, you know, blah, 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 this is what's going on, this is how I'm feeling, this is, you know, blah, blah, blah. And finally says to me, you know, hey, look, you know, whatever. And, you know, I said to him, you know, you never call me. Sometimes I don't think that, like, you're a friend because you never call me. He said, you know why I never call you? I said, no, he said, because you never call me. Oh, shit, that's what he's done. It's like the last 3 years or 2 years, I guess, I've been calling, like, people like number three and number four and number five down that list. You know that list? That list of people that I hope I never have to call? I call them. Well, I haven't called David yet, but I call people down that list, and I talk to people. And I can say that I'm wrong today. Yes, I was wrong for not calling you. You're absolutely right, and that's going to change right now. Today I can promptly admit when I'm wrong. The 11th step tells us, we saw through prayer and meditation, to improve our conscious contact. Those same four words as we understood him. Praying only for knowledge of his will and the power to carry that out. Today when I get on my knees, that's what I pray for. Knowledge of his will and the power to carry that out. I'm not much into the meditation part of it. I still do that. Like, if I could find time to get quiet, which is usually on my motorcycle. Pipes are so loud, I can't hear myself think anyway. But that's good, because loud pipes save lives. That should be a brochure. But I get on the motorcycle and I ride, and I can meditate. Because for like the 20, 30 minutes that I'm just driving around the block or up the road or down the street or whatever I'm doing,
That's all I'm doing. I'm by myself all alone and I can meditate. It's time for me to clear my head out.
Just let whatever stress is going on just go.
The prayer part has become a whole lot easier too, because now I say God in the beginning of all my prayers. It used to be like, yo. Hey, you.
They tell me once that you gotta worry when they start answering you back. Now, I don't know why I should start worrying now, because I've been having these voices in my head for years. I have a friend, actually it's Lisa's ex-husband. I heard him say something in a meeting. Now here's another thing. Boy, I'm gonna rant tonight. You better get another tape, Kathy. The 12th tradition says anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all traditions. Every mind in us place principles before personalities. And at the end of the meeting, everyone gets up and they go. And what that means is what you hear here, who you see here, let it stay here when you leave here, hear here, or something ridiculously stupid like that. 12th tradition in Narcotics Anonymous basic text, 5th edition, says nothing like that. It says what's said in meetings stays in meetings. Hell, if I couldn't repeat what I heard from other people in meetings at the next meeting, I would have been done an hour ago. What's said in meetings stays in meetings. Don't go dragging people's names and their stuff out in the street. But if I hear something that I could use that's going to keep me clean, and I go to another meeting tomorrow and I hear somebody going through that same problem, I'm going to tell them exactly what I heard at that last meeting. Because it worked for me, and now I hope it can work for you. And if you guys didn't do that, then I might not still be clean today. I want you to tell me what you heard at other meetings. And I'm glad the basic text, 5th edition, I think it's page 102, says what it says. What's said in meetings stays in meetings. When people do that thing, what you see here, who you hear here, let it stay here, when you leave here, I just like turn my head or cough or something. It's like... My doctor used to tell me to do that. Turn your head and cough. I think the guys would understand that. Ladies, ask your man when you get home. Well, that's what my spiel on the traditions. Well, not tradition anyway. But so that this friend of mine, Dennis, people say that. People come to me and they say, like, is this committee going on in their head? Well, Dennis made it real simple for me, and it really works, and I really like what he said. I'm going to use it. I have a friend, Sonny. Sonny, I'm going to, like, tell stories on stories here. You get two tapes, Kathy. Sonny and I have never met until tonight. Sonny has been my friend for 5 years. Sonny and I met through a BBS on a computer 5 years ago. Sonny and I talked to each other on the phone. We've written letters to each other. I didn't even know for the past 5 years, and it didn't really matter, and I didn't really care that Sonny, what Sonny looked like, what her measurements were. I was actually able to have a friendship with a female that had nothing at all to do with sex. I think Sonny was the first female that I've had that relationship with, but there's been plenty more since then. But Sonny, I was coming down the hall tonight, and I was just walking, and I heard, BAM! I don't know nobody behind me. Well, don't you stop when people call your name? Oh, wow. And I met her for the first time. Here she is. She was in Texas. I was in North Carolina. Then she was in Durham and I was in New York. And she was in Virginia and I was in Durham. But we're both here tonight. And hi, son. But Sonny always says, the first time I say it, that I took it from you, I'll give you credit for it. The next time, it's mine. Next time, it's mine. I always say that too, but I always give her credit for it also. But anyway, Dennis, he's getting credit for this one, this time only, and from now on, it's mine. But Dennis said, it's easier than the committee. I have a bus, and it's like all the seats in the bus are filled. And every day, somebody else wants to drive. Except for addiction. He just sits in the back row, sits all alone, never says a word. He never asks to drive. All these people every day want to drive. And sometimes they do. Sometimes they do. I was told that being normal meant having one or less personalities. Sometimes I just like to keep it down to three. But every day somebody else wants to drive this bus. Except addiction. Because addiction knows that as soon as I pick up, he's driving. And that was like the simplest I've heard it, the best I've heard it, and I'll give Dennis credit for it this time. And that's what it's like for me sometimes, you know. It's like, I got this, it's more than a committee, because not only do I talk to myself, I answer myself. So when they said you got to start watching out when you're meditating, you're waiting for the answer, I've been hearing the answer for years. So this meditation stuff, I got to go on my motorcycle and get it. I got to. Because that's the only way I can't hear myself talking. And I started doing the 12 step. And this time when I did the 12 step, I actually looked at the first part of it and the last part of it. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. And the last part says, practice these principles in all our affairs. I didn't look at that the first time. I just saw carry the message. Yeah. But having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps tells me something. It actually makes me a promise. It promised me something. I believe it is only one of two promises that Narcotics Anonymous ever makes. One of them is the promise of freedom from active addiction, the solution that has eluded us for so long. That is also in your basic text. And the other one is having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. It's telling me that if I'm working these other 11 steps, I'm going to have a spiritual awakening. I don't know how it comes, how it gets here, how I got it, but I've had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. It didn't come overnight. Just like our reading say, take it easy. Oh, it's as easy as it, that's right. But that's what it tells us. We didn't get addicted in one day, so remember. But do it. Just do it. You can just keep coming back and it's going to start working. Now, last step says, practice these principles in all our affairs. It's actually second nature at this point for me to be nice to somebody that I meet on the street. To walk down the street and actually smile to somebody. To actually be friendly. It's second nature to deal with people. I just started my own business. And it's actually second nature now to be able to deal with customers like they're always right. Even when I know absolutely for sure, for certain, that they're damn wrong. I did that job. I know the guy that works for me didn't break something. He wasn't even there. But yes, ma'am, I'll be right over. Yes, sir, I'll see to it. But I'm also not a doormat today. Ma'am, if I get there and I find out that it really wasn't what we did, then I am going to have to charge you a service call. Do you remember what the guy looked like that came over? I'm not a doormat today. I can be a nice guy, but I don't have to be a doormat. Now, the middle part of the 12 step, we try to carry this message to addicts. This we can do in a variety of ways, and is probably the only step that we really actually don't have to have had a spiritual awakening before we can do something to help other addicts. But that doesn't mean that we have to go out and help the still suffering addict, because we have no business doing that. That doesn't mean that we have to be the ones to jump up and grab drugs out of other people's faces walking down the street. You're not going to get the result you're looking for. But you can go to meetings a little bit early and set up chairs. The addicts need that. You can volunteer to make coffee. Addicts need that. You can volunteer to be part of the Public Information Subcommittee of Narcotics Anonymous, who thank God was working before I even knew anything about it, because I needed them when I opened up that phone book. Thank God for Hospitals and Institutions Subcommittee of Narcotics Anonymous, because I had no clue when I was in the joint. But somehow or other, it must have worked for somebody, because my brother said to me, get to a meeting. that, my brother called me up about, I had about 3 months clean, and he said, I fucked up, man. I've been out for 3 weeks. What do I do? And I said, well, the best thing I can tell you is do the same thing you told me to do. Get your ass to a meeting. And in April, he celebrated 12 years of recovery. Program works through people who do the work. Get involved. Like I said, I'm an H&I kind of guy. I haven't done a lot of H&I work since I've been in Durham. I did every once in a while, I'll go with one of my friends, one of my two friends, up to one of the hospitals, you know, but I really need to start getting more involved in service. And I think I was waiting for my sponsor to tell me, okay, it's time for you to work 12-step again, and it just happened that he did the other day. I'm starting my 12-step again, so I guess it's time for me to start getting back into service again, too. But we have plenty of fine committees, plenty of outstanding places and people. Get involved. We have a great convention committee that I bet you they told you at every single meeting, no clean time requirement to come to our meetings. And they're right wing. So I know that that's there. You don't need the clean time. Now, if you want to go to an H&I meeting, yeah, you'll need 3 months, 6 months, a year, whatever it is they ask you. If you want to carry money for Narcotics Anonymous, you'll need 2 years. You know, things like that. But just to get involved in service, I don't think you need a day clean to just do something. Make coffee. Put up chairs. I'll tell you one of the biggest parts of service, one of the biggest things that are involved in our service, that when we get up from each and every meeting that we leave, we need to pick up at least 2 chairs and 1 piece of garbage. Because not everybody leaves garbage, but everyone's sitting in a chair. So if you pick up 2, you're picking up for somebody who forgot or had to leave early. If you pick up 1 piece of garbage, you're getting all the garbage that's in the room. And you know why this is the most important service work that we can do? Because when we leave a room, and the people that own the place that we're at, they come in and they go, wow, this is a great, they did a nice job. Yes, we'll invite, yes, we can have them back next week, next year, next month. It gives a good name for Narcotics Anonymous. Okay. But when we walk out of a room and we've left chairs turned over and coffee stains on the rugs and garbage left on the floor and gum stuck up underneath the seats, they walk in and I go, what a bunch of slobs. An addict is an addict is an addict and will never change. We don't want them back here next week. And then when the newcomer, when the addict that's still suffering, hears from the helpline or the toll stopper or the meeting list that there's a meeting in that location. In an hour, he's in luck, and I'll meet you there. And he gets there, and the door's locked, and there ain't no meeting. That addict will die seeking recovery. And I believe I read somewhere, no addict need die seeking recovery. So pick up after yourselves is the best thing you can do. Show up early, stay late. Bring your body and mind follows. Things have changed so much for me since I got clean. It's like unbelievable. Yeah, I'm still a biker. I just dress better these days. And yes, I still own a Harley Davidson. And yes, I still go to meetings. And yes, I still... And yes, I'm getting married to a lady that I love and have been with for quite a while now. And all of these things would not be possible if it not for Narcotics Anonymous. I've learned through Narcotics Anonymous that we can grow and we can stay alive and the newcomer can come around and we can all grow together as long as we stick with Narcotics Anonymous. Now, if you want to go to your psychiatric social worker, fine, go. But when you come back to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, please, I don't want to hear that shit. I know that's just me. But if I wanted to hear what your psychiatric social worker said, I would have went with you to his meeting. Come to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting to hear a Narcotics Anonymous message from members of Narcotics Anonymous. If I wanted something else, I would have gone there. I've tried other things. For me, they didn't work. So if they didn't work then, I'm not going to expect them to work now. Please, when you get here, leave them at the door with your drugs. I love this program. It may have been the last house on the block, but it's the only house I ever needed. I took it to my first meeting, and by the grace of God, I picked up my first and only white chip on January 1st, 1985. Now, usually you don't say how long I've been clean, but I guess it really doesn't matter, because I told you how long my brother's been clean, and obviously I was clean 3 months longer. But I get my recovery in Narcotics Anonymous from people who go to Narcotics Anonymous meetings. I have an NA sponsor who has an NA sponsor who has an NA sponsor. The last time I went to a gathering of our sponsorship tree, there was over 200 people at this gathering. We go down to Miami every year. I'm going back down again October 25th. It's amazing the way this fellowship. We used to have this gathering in my sponsor's house with six of us. We used to do step workshops and go over things, and I always try to beat Jeff to the punch. Now I'm just glad to be able to see Jeff is still clean and still going to meetings. You know, I go down and I'm glad to see these guys. I'm glad to see how much, like, she was saying earlier, like what I was saying earlier, like, look how much this room has grown. Like, I haven't been here before. But I just saw, like, when I walked in, you had, like, three rows and, like, three sections. And then as I was sitting here, you had to bring more and more and more and more chairs in. And then more, and then still more. And there's still more people standing up in the back of the room. They didn't expect this. Look how much this fellowship has grown. We're here for the newcomer. We can't get what we have unless we give it away. I love this program. One of the last things I did before I got up here is I got on my knees and I asked God to send you a message. Hopefully He did. Hopefully you got something from this. I had butterflies when I started, and they're all gone now, so I must be done. Thank you very much for letting me share this.